Hello, I'm Claire Nichols with another bonus episode of The Hub on Books and another chance to meet a debut Australian writer. And today, a name that's got some real buzz. Sarah Lestrange, who have you got for us?
Absolutely. Brisbane-based journalist Trent Dalton's novel Boy Swallows Universe topped the Brisbane Writers Festival sales this year. It's set in Brisbane, so it really doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, the buzz about this book has been huge. I've heard so much about it. Is all the attention justified?
It's a really powerful read. And for me, it took me right back to my childhood in 1980s Brisbane. Even Amazon's water park in Jindalee makes it into the novel, which I went to. It's no longer open.
Wow, that is always really exciting to read. What's the book about?
Boy Swallows Universe is the story of teenager Eli Bell and his brother August, who doesn't talk. It's their story growing up in Brisbane and how they deal with their really challenging upbringing. Their mother is a former drug addict. She and her partner sell heroin on the streets of Brisbane, and Eli and his brother also live with their father, who's a really difficult character too. But it's also a story full of poetry and wonder, which transported me.
I'd love to hear some of it.
Well, Trent Dalton did a really powerful reading for us. Here he is setting up the reading.
This is where we find Eli and his brother August. You know, it's the summer in Brisbane. He's on holidays. It's that classic case of drug dealing families face these challenges as well. How do you look after the kids on school holidays? Eli and August have to go on the drug runs of their kind of stepfather figure, Lyle, and his best friend, Teddy. Nothing connects a city quite like Southeast Asian heroin. This glorious month of Saturdays, with the Jindalee pool shut for renovations, found Lyle, Teddy, August and I crisscrossing the city of Brisbane between every cultural minority, every gang, every obscure subculture, my sprawling and hot city nurses in its sweaty bosom. The Italians in South Brisbane, the collar-up rugby crowd in Ballymore, the drummers and guitarists and the buskers and the busted bands of Fortitude Valley. You can't say a word about this to your mum, you hear? Lyle says as we pull up outside the Highgate Hill-based state headquarters of a national neo-Nazi group, White Hammer, led by a softly spoken and thin 25-year-old man named Timothy, who was open enough to tell Lyle during a genial exchange of cash and drugs that he does not actually shave his skin head, but is, in fact, naturally bald, which makes me silently consider what struck him first along his unique philosophical journey, the notion of white supremacy or white male pattern baldness. I don't know what I expected from drug dealing. More romance, perhaps. A sense of danger and suspense. I realise now that the average street grunt suburban drug dealer is not too far removed from the common pizza delivery boy. Half these deals Lyle and Teddy are making, I could make in half the time, riding through the southwest Brisbane suburbs on my mongoose BMX, with the gear in my backpack. August could probably do it even faster because he rides faster than me, and he's got a 10-speed Melvin Star racer. August and I do our maths homework in the back of Teddy's Mazda as we cross the Story Bridge from north to south and south to north. The bridge of stories. Stories like the one about the boys who beat the fire. Stories like the one about the mute boy and his little brother, who never asked for nothing but the answers to the questions.
Wow, I can see why you were so taken with this book, Sarah. Trent Dalton, he writes for The Australian, I know. How did he manage to find the time to write this book?
Yeah, he's another one of those journos turned novelists. There are a few of them around, as you know. And he told me it actually didn't take long to get the words down on the page.
I'm 39 now. I finished the book when I was 38, and it took me, you know, all of my life and 1 year. So, you know, about, yeah, it's probably 2 years ago now. And then the writing of it, yeah, it was like, you know, I'm a writer for the Oz, and that was the difficult part. It's just sort of like finding the time to do it. And basically I'd got this hugely understanding wife, and, you know, it's such a cliche, the understanding wife, and she's so much more than that, you know, than just an understanding wife. So, but, you know, we'd have dinner and then the kids would go to bed and I'd go downstairs into our little sort of rumpus area and I'd write from 8 till 10 at night. And basically, you know, this beautiful kid, Eli Bell, that I invented, enabled me to confront stuff that as 38-year-old journo Trent Dalton, he probably wouldn't have been able to confront. This kid wrote the book for me, Sarah. He just, He just said, man, I'm stronger than you. I'm wiser than you. I'm savvier than you. I'm cooler than you. Let me do it. And he did it. And, you know, it was incredible. It was sort of electrifying.
Isn't that amazing? The fictions we create can be stronger than ourselves.
Oh, completely, completely. This kid, I love, you know, I love Eli Bell. And he did things in this world that I'm creating, that I'm describing, that is real and unreal, but he did things with those situations that I always wanted to do. And, you know, that's what the book's about.
Sarah, it sounds like a lot of this book is based on Trent's own life. Is that right?
It really is. Eli Bell has many of the experiences Trent had growing up. There's a few extra ones in there too because it is a novel. Trent had a really tough upbringing, which he's transformed into this novel, and it's set in places that don't normally feature in fiction.
It's a world that I knew very, very well. It's the world of 1980s Brisbane that is in my DNA, Sarah, and I felt sometimes in my day job as a journalist, I saw what you might call an invisibility blanket laid out across that world for quite some time.
What do you mean by an invisibility blanket?
I mean a blanket of invisibility that's laid out sometimes across those outer fringe suburbs, across every capital city across Australia, really, where things happen, dark things and beautiful things and really strange things happen. And they don't always make the headlines. And I hadn't really seen that world in fiction too. The world I knew of, the world that Eli is in, he's being raised by two very successful heroin dealers, dangerously successful. If you get successful in that game, it starts to become quite dangerous. There are criminals coming back and forth to his home. His wisdom figure is a man named Slim Halliday, who was a former convicted killer. He escaped from Boggo Road twice in the 1940s, and his great saviour is his older brother, August, who is mute and sort of seems to know the secrets of the universe. And strangely enough, that's kind of all inspired by the world that I just was talking about, 1980s Brisbane, that I kind of grew up in, Sarah. I know it sounds really bizarre, but like, some of that is true, and I know that sounds ridiculous, but and so that's that world. But it's that 80s world that I love too. I'm talking the Kirk's range of soft drinks. I'm talking family ties on television, and you know, I felt like I had a Billabong chocolate Billabong ice block that lasted 10 years, and I sucked on that thing, you know, forever. And you know, it was BMX bicycles. It was, you know, In Excess on the radio, and in my world, it was heroin as well. You know, that's the only difference I had between some 1980s kids across Australia that everyone else knows.
Well, I grew up in Brisbane in the 1980s, and I can tell you heroin didn't feature in my world. I was growing up a few suburbs away from you. But, it was a very different world. And the world you bring to light is one of terror and wonder in this book. And I guess a book that's called Boy Swallows Universe has that kind of magical element. Where did that mythical element come from? How did you draw that into the story to uplift the story of, you know, a pretty hard childhood?
Yeah, you know, the fact of the matter is my mum fell in love, you know, and this is real world stuff. My mum fell in love with a guy who was this kind of career criminal. And that guy was also, though, the man that I loved deeply, and he was the first sort of father figure that I knew, and he sort of went away from my life. He taught me everything, and he taught me how to be strong and taught me how to be resilient, but on paper, that guy was a man who, and this is true to life, like this is no joke, this is a fact, he holds the record for the most, for a Queenslander, the most time spent behind bars. And that guy, when I was a kid, vanished from my life because he got put in Boggo Road prison for 10 years. And that world quickly crumbled for me. And I loved that guy, and he got taken away, and I spent the rest of my teens hoping that guy would sort of turn up at my door. But, you know, the law wasn't going to allow that. And my brothers and I get dragged across to a housing commission area called in Bracken Ridge on the northern fringe of Brisbane. And, yeah, you know, it's pretty fair to say that house for about 10 years you know, was kind of defined by, you know, a bunch of things. And, you know, violence was one of them, you know, and my old man had a, you know, a few issues, perhaps a few issues with the bottle, and channeled his many demons into the wrong places. And, you know, my mum had sort of kind of vanished from our lives, and because she was dealing with her own issues, and, you know, some of these dark times sort of fall upon a whole bunch of kids, right? And they defined my life from 0 to 20, and I'm 39 now, but my first half of my life was dead set, like totally beset by violence, desperation, anxiety, poverty. And I wanted to take all those things, right, Sarah? Like, it's like what I did, and it's really weird, I don't know why I did this, I tried to make them some kind of mythology. And I came around to writing this book, and I'm like, what I'm doing is turning all those things into this mythology that was almost meant to be. So the kid feels like he's meant to be a journalist. I became a journalist. I didn't necessarily feel I was meant to be a journo. The kid feels like he's going to meet this girl, Caitlin Spies, who's basically my wife in real life. And, you know, he's gonna one day have two kids. What I'm doing is saying all these deeply, deeply dark things, right? For me, in real world, Trent, some weird thing, I feel like for them to exist, they felt like they had to be, because it's all leading to something beautiful, which is my wife and daughters. But that's not the reality. The reality is that those years were just tragic and kind of sad at some stage. Don't get me wrong, in our house that I describe in Bracken Ridge, there was so much love, Sarah. Like, there was love like you wouldn't believe from my dad. He loved, I've never seen a bloke love his kids with the depth that my old man loved us. But I just wanted to do this thing where I sort of, I don't know, it's almost like I had to convince myself that there was some meaning to those moments. And I suspect there wasn't, but in the book, the kid, it's almost as if Eli Bell is trying to convince himself of that too, that all this darkness has to have some purpose to it.
Eli Bell is definitely searching for meaning. And one of the things that he's searching for is that line between when someone turns from good to bad. Is it because of the way they were raised? Is it something innate? So this is something that he is searching for. Were you searching for that through writing this book, in thinking about yourself in that time?
Absolutely. That's something I've questioned all my life. And there's a reason why I questioned it, because the male role models in my life have been deeply flawed. So first male role model, he goes away to prison for 10 years. But he gave all my brothers and I so much to carry through life. So is that guy a good man or a bad man? You know, I mean, I would be the last person to glorify, you know, drug dealing and, you know, the spread of bloody devastating drugs that just ruin families throughout the suburbs of Australia. I don't want to, you know, ever sort of take that lightly. But the fact remains is that, you know, I love that guy deeply, and he treated my, you know, he was perhaps the guy who treated my mum best throughout the series of assholes that, you know, she would sort of meet later on in life. And Slim Halliday, he was a real figure in my brothers and my life. Slim Halliday, convicted killer, notorious prison escapee. Yet, when my mum was in her darkest hour, who was there to give her advice? Slim Halliday. So do I not keep that tenderness that he gave my mum in her darkest hour inside my heart and consider him a good man? Or can I still consider him a good man if on paper, even though people have written books about Slim that profess his innocence, if on paper he's a murderer, you know, can I still call him a good man? My old man, my beloved dad, who, I don't know, every probably high school teacher I ever had probably looked at him as a pretty sort of not the best figure to be raising kids, but my brothers would all tell you that he was the best old man around, even though there were some nights that were truly dark and truly, you know, kind of horrific. So what's a good man? And this idea that can you take advice from these bad men? Can you take advice about being good? And maybe because they're on the other side of good, they're pretty well positioned to talk about goodness. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe. That's sort of what I question in the book, and the kid's constantly looking for that.
When I set out to read Boy Swallows Universe, I knew that it was based in part on your own life. And so during my research, I found myself searching photos of you to see if you had all your fingers.
Oh, It's the funniest thing.
I think you do have all your fingers.
I do.
And the reason I say this is because one of the characters, I don't want to give it away, loses one of his fingers. But it made me wonder, what is it about fiction that makes some of us want to find the facts? But it also made me wonder about, you know, the difference between memoir and fiction. What is it for you?
It's funny about that finger stuff, and this is it. It's almost like people are disappointed. Like, it's been this thing, Sarah, I swear, they come up to these book events I've been doing, you know, across the country, and they grab my hands, and they're really physical about it. They're just, and they go, give me a look, I need to know. But they're almost disappointed that there's not a finger missing. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Oh, you liar. You liar.
I know, and you feel like, oh, look, I'm so sorry. Like, it is this, you know, it's something I pondered too. Do I come out and go, look, this is inspired by my life, but, you know, how much do I say is true and how much isn't? Do I be definitive? So, because I'm a journo, right? We deal in facts, and like, you don't want to mislead people. I don't want people to feel ripped off or betrayed or something, or worse, deceived, you know? Like, and that would be terrible. But there are moments in that book, for narrative reasons, that I had to add in because, and this is my thing about memoir and fiction, is the story of my life, if I was to write that as a memoir, it would be a blow-by-blow story of a kid growing up in the suburbs who gets through that through the help of, you know, through the help of one thing, which is love, like true love coming from his father, his mum, the people who are battling their own sort of troubles but had wells of love that you wouldn't believe, and through the help of three beautiful older brothers. And then that kid falls in love with a journalist and has two kids and moves into a nice, comfortable sort of house in kind of middle-class Brisbane. So for me, that ending, it's that ending doesn't really, you know, I wanted to write a story that took people to places that my life didn't go. So I wanted to write a story that did talk about good and bad and good and evil, and I wanted to take people to the edges of the universe, all the way to, you know, the profound things of life that we all ponder, you know, like the very meaning of life. I actually wanted to go there and just go, well, let's give it a crack. What does Eli Bell think is the meaning of life? And let's see if we can answer that. I couldn't do that in memoir. You know, I said that to the publishers too. I said, I had a few people who wanted me to write something, right? And like a few publishers and stuff. And I always said to them, I'm not going to write it like a misery memoir. Because the thing also, Sarah, I know this is about to sound cheesy. Like, I had this ambition, right? This sounds so stupid. But you know how Dickens wrote about, like, unlucky kids in industrial London? Mm. I wanted to write about unlucky kids in Housing Commission Brisbane, right?
So that's your Dickens version?
I don't know.
You take us to Dara.
Like, I know it sounds so ridiculous and so wanky, but, like, or ambitious. Like, and I'm not saying ever comparing myself to that great writer, but the idea of that is it, like what he did to capture those worlds of those kids, I found profound, and I think he did that beautifully. And I love what he also does is he creates narrative arcs that go for many years. And I also wanted to do that. I wanted to write something where you see growth and you can plant things in the first 100 pages that don't pay off until page 350, or you can plant questions that don't get answered until the very last page of the book. Again, I couldn't do that in memoir either because, yeah, it was all about excitement. And this is the cheesy part. This is the cheesy part. I generally want that kid, that unlucky kid in Brackenridge Housing Commission right now to go, oh, hang on, this is my world. And bloody hell, this is just a rollicking adventure that this kid's on.
It certainly does sound like a rollicking adventure, but a pretty dark one too. Thanks for bringing us that interview, Sarah Lestrange.
No worries, Claire. And I reckon that most people in Brisbane will read this book because Brisbaneites love seeing ourselves in fiction.
Oh, so do we West Australians. That's why we keep going back to Cloud Street all these years later. I'm looking forward to this one, Boy Swallows Universe. It's published by Fourth Estate. Make sure you have a listen to our other interviews in this debut writer's bonus series. It's a really great way to discover new authors that Sarah and I think you'll be hearing more from in the future. Thanks to you for listening today. I'm Claire Nichols. Talk soon. All you got is a small man. Yesterday, you can care all you want.
does, yeah, that's okay, yeah. So slide over here and give me